I am super excited about this week's guest, author Melody Warnick. She is the author of two of my favorite books. The first one is This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving Where You Live. And the other one is called If You Can Live Anywhere. Absolutely two amazing books that I believe that anybody who that is into communities and community development should stay tuned and listen in, as well as read her books. And what is also great about this episode is that she goes through the process of writing her books. I know there are many of us out there who have a book within us, and having this information on where to even start is super important for us to getting those words out. So please stay tuned. And if you like the episode, don't forget to like, subscribe, and comment. And I hope you enjoy this week's episode. Hey, everyone, and welcome to The Seed. We are changing over to a new podcast show that is more reflective of where I am in life. Ironically, The Seed was planted by every guest that I had on my Homes and Hops podcast. So listen in, subscribe, and comment on my new monthly podcast, The Seed, which stems from Dandelion Discussions, all about women empowerment, entrepreneurship, and objectives that are often planted in us. Our guest stories are here to inspire, educate, and most importantly, to let you know you are not alone. I hope everyone out there is having a great day and staying warm, and this Arctic chill will be over soon. I have Melody Warnick here, who, whether she realizes or not, I love and adore. So
thank you.
Melody is an author. For the first time, and I'm not sure if Melody remembers meeting me at St. John's Episcopal Church in our local area. It was Reverend Gale who brought you to town to speak to us. And I was so excited to meet the author of this book that had completely shifted my direction in how to become more connected with my community. It's absolutely phenomenal. And the book is called This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving Where You Are.
Thank you. Yes.
And then I've come to find out that she wrote a whole other book. And it was If You Could Live Anywhere, which ironically, as where you might think the title would be like, well, if you could live anywhere, then you don't have that community attachment. It still is so deep rooted in being attached to the community and where you choose to live.
Yeah, I kind of feel like I wrote them backwards, you know, that maybe the first step is that if you could live anywhere, let's really think about what kind of community we want to land in. And then once you're there, read This Is Where You Belong and figure out how to really put down deep roots there. But yeah, absolutely. I think no matter where you end up living and what brought you there and whether you had a choice about it or not, that everyone can choose to love the place they're in and connect and contribute to their community.
I couldn't agree more, because I do think that people need to have an ownness if they're unhappy about where they live, and find out if it's due to them not connecting with what's available to them and the amenities and the treasures that are all around, or if it's just really like, you're just not into it. Like, you're not a city girl, you're not a rural girl, like you, or a suburbanite. You need to find something that matches more of what quality of living that you're looking for, which, as you did state in the last book, You Can Live Anywhere, seems to be more the trend lately.
Yeah, I mean, what we've seen is, especially with COVID, there was this shift to people doing a lot of remote work, and all of a sudden people even the people who weren't remote working started thinking really hard about, am I in the place that I actually want to be? People had a little more choice about that. And so I think, you know, I think studies have shown nearly 50% of Americans thought about moving during COVID. You know, they were really analyzing where they lived. And I think that's a good pattern for people. Sometimes you end up, for whatever reason, you end up in a place that isn't a particularly great fit. Like you were saying, you're a real city person and you've ended up in the suburbs or in the country and it's just not great for you. And you can either change that for yourself by moving to the place that is a better fit, or, and maybe both, you decide, I'm really going to learn how to like it here. And yes. I think that's possible for anyone. You know, I wrote my first book, This Is Where You Belong, because I had moved to a town in Southwest Virginia, Blacksburg, because my husband got a job here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, which is the reason a lot of us move. We just kind of follow jobs around. And right away, I knew I didn't like it, you know. Like, and some of that is just moving is hard. And mm-hmm. you go from a community where you have friends and you have your book club and, you know, your favorite restaurants.
Where did you move from to get to Blacksburg?
So we moved from Austin, Texas, and that was part of the problem, right?
Like, that is very different.
Yeah, we moved from this big, vibrant city yes. that was really the cool place where everyone was going. We only lived there for a couple of years, but we moved from Austin to this town of 45,000 in the Blue Ridge Mountains. So it was kind of like the huge contrast in possible places, big city yeah. to small town, sunny and humid and hot to gray and rainy and people call it Bleaksburg. And, you know, we went from having this amazing restaurant scene to, you know, we have Taco Bell and,
yes.
And so that was a hard transition. And so in those first few months of living in Blacksburg, it was just like, what have we done? Why did we choose this? Why did we end up here?
And you were still writing at this time, right? So
yeah.
So Melody has written for The New Yorker, Oprah, Washington Post, Women's. Yeah. Like, you've written for a lot of magazines and newspapers.
Yeah.
So are you still writing then?
So I was freelance writing for many years, which made my work very portable. So I was kind of always yes. following my husband's job around. And we moved here because he got a job for Virginia Tech, the university in Blacksburg. And I actually now work for Virginia Tech too. So I do less freelance writing and more writing about things that are happening at the university and stuff like that. So that's kind of how my job has played out in the past couple of years. But yeah, I, you know, came here and we had moved around a fair bit before landing here. You know, we had spent a little time in Texas and Iowa and Maryland and Utah. And I think moving around that much made me think, if I don't like it, then I solve that problem by moving away. And I think this is it's something I call the geographic cure. It's a little bit of magical thinking where you think, I have a problem and the best way to solve this is just, I'm going to pick up and move.
Yep.
And maybe the next community will be different, or at least, you know, I won't have these same problems with my neighbors or this friend I'm in a fight with, or all these volunteer commitments that have become overwhelming. You know, I'm just going to move and have a clean slate. So I always kind of liked that about moving, but then you land in the new place and you realize, oh, I actually brought myself with me and all my, my issues and all my problems. And I have to figure out a new life in this new place. And so that's kind of what inspired writing a book about how to put down roots and feel at home in a community is, I don't like it here, but I know I need to. And what do I do?
Yeah, to make it work and to make yourself happier.
Yeah.
I was in Florida when your book, one of my friends recommended your book to me, because we had moved from Washington, D.C. to Youngstown, Ohio. So you're talking about two extremes. Now, granted, I did grow up here, so I knew what I was getting myself into. And in all honesty, I was looking to try to get back to who I was versus who I was becoming in that fast-paced environment. So there was that aspect of my longing to want to come back to my hometown. But there was that loss, too, of what I was leaving in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Like I graduated in political science. So you had that connectivity of like, you're literally surrounded by people that you can have easy political discourse with at the drop of a hat. Like it's yeah. fine. There's very rare that you could truly offend anybody. I'm not sure if that's still today, but 10 years ago, you were able to do this. So you had the restaurant scene. So if you're a foodie, that is a phenomenal place to live. You had the city, which was not overwhelming like a New York City or San Francisco. I always consider Washington, D.C. a big city, but with small town mentality.
Yeah. I love Washington, D.C. Oh, so yeah. Now you're making me want to live there. I'm like, you're right.
but it's true. It's like you were able to be right there in the hub of everything. And then within 5 miles, be at the national park, go yeah. kayaking. Like it was really a phenomenal place to live. However, it is fast paced. And there is a demand. And sometimes there can come a bit of a detachment when it comes to relationships with people
mm-hmm.
that I long to get back from my hometown. So that was the transition of where I really wanted to get back to my home. But I was handed your book because I was like, I've been gone for 14 years. This place has moved on from me. How do I get myself back?
Yeah.
So, and I did. I read it. I think I read your book in 2 days. And immediately, Tony and Michelle, that Vicani, that handed me that book that really shifted my mindset here.
I love that. So. Thank you for saying that. And I love what you brought up about moving, that we look to our places a lot of times to really reflect the person we want to be. And so, like you're saying, I wanted to move back to Youngstown to reclaim myself or reclaim yes. parts of myself. And I think there's, when we choose a place to live, that's a little bit of what's happening in our minds, you know, like we want to become the fast-paced person or kind of the slower, more community-minded person. And I think that's part of the difficulty of relocating is that disconnect between the person we want to be in this place, the person we thought we were going to be in this place, and the person we actually are, because yes. you know, there are things.
They are two different people.
Right. They are two different people. You know, like I think I always kind of had that in mind. And, you know, I remember moving to Blacksburg and knowing that it was a much smaller town and kind of thinking, I am now going to become that
yes.
small town person who has a garden and who knows my neighbors and things like that. But it doesn't just happen. It's something that we have to work towards. We have to kind of become the person we want to be in this place. And so I think that is a hard transition. Even if you have been very thoughtful about the place you want to live and why you want to live there, I think that it takes time to sort of grow into, to evolve into that person you're hoping to be in this location.
I completely agree. And then you transition to if you could live anywhere, which now has my mind, what was the anywhere-est, right?
Yeah.
If I could be an anywhere-est, where would I go? And part of that too is the spark of the conversations that I've heard since the pandemic. So that when the pandemic happened, we did have friends in Washington, D.C. Since they were remote work, they decided to move to Colorado for a year, go to Florida for a year. And it's still happening. I actually have a cousin who I just saw last December that let me know for the next 6 months, she's going to work from Portugal.
Well,
because
kind of a nice life.
I know. She's young. Actually, she's in journalism too.
And she's not alone. So, you know, I write in the book about some of these places that people are moving, and one of them is Portugal, that I think that would absolutely be my plan. If I was just going to uproot and relocate and be an anywhereist full time, I think that is really appealing too. It's just, I'm not going to settle anywhere. I'm going to spend 6 months here and 6 months there. And, you know, we have a great curiosity about the world and what it's like to live in different places.
Yes. Instead of just working out of all the various coffee shops in your town, you can expand it even further.
Right. You could actually work in a foreign country and no one would know. I mean, I heard stories about that, you know, especially during COVID. Someone said, you know, there was someone in our office who was working remotely and they were road tripping all over the United States to national parks, and no one even knew because they would just use a Zoom backdrop and no one had any clue that they weren't in their home office.
Tell me though, when you're on a call with somebody that uses the Zoom backdrop,
you're like,
where are you really? Are you at the office right now? I'm thinking not.
Right. I need some proof that you're actually... Something about the lighting has changed.
I know. I just want to be like, just turn off your camera. Turn it off.
Yeah, exactly.
I probably wouldn't even think twice if you just had your camera off.
Right. Quit this farce and just own it.
Exactly. Like, you're in a t-shirt. You're not in a typical suit. you're at home.
100%. Totally.
So how did you even start with the thought process? Was it the pandemic that really like had your wheels turning with the second book? And then after you go through that, I just really, really would love to know where your top three choices of where you would choose to live and why.
Yeah. So it actually was something I was thinking about before the pandemic, if you can believe it, because we've seen this trend of digital nomads, you know, people like your cousin who are just, you know, working from anywhere because they can. That's been happening for a while now. And we've seen growth in the number of remote workers. So it was definitely something that I had my eye on before the pandemic hit, that this was something people were thinking about a lot. And I try to make clear in the book, you know, I use the term anywhereist to describe these sort of remote workers who are not tied in place by their job. They really, you know, they're super mobile. But in some respects, most of us can be anywhereist, at least for, you know, a moment in time, because you're a teacher or a doctor or an office worker or a construction worker, and you can kind of find those jobs all over the country and even internationally. And so most of us have more options than we think we do. We have, you know, more choice than we might have realized about where we choose to live. So I was really fascinated by how people make those decisions about where to live, you know, in my own experience of moving around the country and seeing what brought people to this community here in Blacksburg. I have multiple friends who came here pre-pandemic because they were remote workers who kind of looked at a map and said, we can go anywhere and we like.
Were they Virginia Tech graduates?
Some of them were, but some of them weren't, you know, like some of them really research and, you know, dig into this. I write in the book, If You Could Live Anywhere, about people who, you know, make these elaborate spreadsheets of all the qualities they want in a place. And here's the locations that match what I'm looking for. And I've heard of other people who literally like spin the globe and put their finger down and they're just curious about the world.
Which one would you be, the spin the globe or the Excel sheet?
Oh my gosh, Excel sheet for sure. Not gonna spin the globe at all. But it's interesting too, because I think we make the Excel sheets, but we might not always be super clear to ourselves about what matters to us. And that was something that came up when I was researching the book too, that I'd meet people who were like, we did the research and we visited and we really thought that this was our place. And once we got there, we realized it wasn't for whatever random reason. And there are also people on the other end of the spectrum who really chose kind of on a whim. I write in If You Could Live Anywhere about a woman who was on a road trip with her husband and they were driving through rural Iowa and just charmed by these little towns and these inexpensive real estate and didn't love where they were living currently in Texas. And so they just bought a house and they moved in. And kind of realized over time that what they really wanted was a bigger city. And it really mattered to them to have certain amenities like a yarn store or, you know, like independent film. And they went through this process of learning about themselves, learning what they wanted. So I definitely, you know, it's funny that you asked, like, what are my dream locations? What are the places that are top of my list? Because I worry about that for myself, even with all the research that I've done and the thinking about it, you know, I may have gotten to the point where I've overthought and now I don't even know what I want anymore.
I believe that. I believe all of us could overthink something.
Yes.
Then we're like, well, there's now no more options because I've overthought all the options.
Yes, right. I need to just start over and eliminate everything. So I think among my dream locations, I think a lot about I'm kind of an Anglophile. I would love to live in England and, you know, maybe not forever, maybe even just for a summer or something or a year. But I fantasize about relocating to London and using that as a base to explore England and Europe and all those fun places. So that's something that is on my list. And I bring it up with my husband every couple of months.
We are 100%. We went to London for the first time last year. We took the kids. And since then, I think I mentioned to my husband on a monthly basis, Can we move to Kensington?
Can we go there?
And his response is, of course, you pick the most expensive area.
Of course. It must be posh. Sure. Yeah, we went.
We're in a dream. Let's dream.
Oh, no. Right. Let's dream big. We went 2018 with our family. And just loved it. And I watched so much British TV.
Do you ever watch PBS's, what are the bouquets?
No.
Oh, you'll love it.
Okay.
It's like 1990s. It's back in the day.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I will look it up.
If you like British comedy, you'll love it.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like I've watched every British mystery, you know, like if someone has died in England, you know, like I've watched about it. So yeah, so that's on the list. I also love a good college town. You know, we live in a college town right now, and I think it gives you a good balance sometimes between, you know, a small town feel, but some sort of above your weight class amenities. Like we have a town of 43,000, but we get Broadway shows because we have this big, beautiful Moss Arts Center at Virginia Tech. So, and I really do love Blacksburg. And,
yes.
You know, like this, I'm not trying to be disloyal. I still live in Blacksburg. That's, you know, I wrote my book about moving to Blacksburg and struggling with it. But it's 12 years later and my family is still here. And my husband talk a lot about this. You know, we have two kids, one's already in college and the other one is a junior in high school. So within a couple of years, we'll be empty nesters. And that kind of has been something we keep in our minds is this is a pivot point potentially where we decide we're either, you know, in Blacksburg for the long haul, or if we want to move somewhere else, that's a good opportunity.
He could just not teach summer classes and you can move somewhere during those months.
That is absolutely true. So, I mean, he works in IT at Virginia Tech. So we both do have office jobs, but we could probably both do it remotely too, at least for a time. And I think once the school child is out of the house, we'll have some options. But yeah, so London's on the list. I think maybe a Lawrence, Kansas, or an Ann Arbor, Michigan, you know, some sort of really cool college town might be on the list. I also, my husband and I are both from the West originally. I'm from Southern California. And my husband was pretty mobile as a child, but spent a lot of years in Colorado. So he loves Colorado. And one of his very favorite cities is Fort Collins. So that might also be on the list too. But, you know, like I do kind of love the idea of being a nomad or a slow traveler, at least for a little while. I don't know that I want to do that forever, but kind of think, you know, we put down roots here in Blacksburg for a while. And, you know, it might be kind of fun to explore a little. But yeah, it's hard to make those choices.
I definitely go down the exploration route. And I also, because of your book, will take in consideration of researching cities, which I, for me, somebody who's very interested with economic development, taking into account actually both of your books, but the shift in the direction, if you're looking to grow your population base, if you're looking to attract people to move in, you have to shift your mindset from only thinking those larger companies and bringing them in. Not that you still need them,
yeah,
but that there needs to be this balance, and understanding the world today is the nomadic worker, the digital, that is just going to continuously grow in the amount of people that work in those fields and therefore are choosing where they want to live based upon that Excel spreadsheet that they've created.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's one of the most interesting evolutions that we've seen in the past 5 or 10 years, that the way towns think about attracting and retaining talent, you know, that used to just be something that businesses thought about. And now communities realize that they have to attract and retain talent. And the way you attract and retain talent is by being an awesome city that people want to live in, that has amenities, that's walkable, that has green spaces, that has a cool downtown. You know, like those are the kinds of things.
Those are the things that attract people.
Yeah.
I really do feel anybody who is working in a county, city, township office should 100% read that book, because it is a plethora of ideas and insight on how to attract more people. And for in our state of Ohio, I think it is very well known that one of our biggest problems is the fact that our entire state, not just our little nook in the corner, is losing its population.
Yeah. And you're not alone in that. You know, there's a lot of states that are suffering from brain drain, you know, most of the Midwest. I was just this week speaking in Salina, Texas, north of Dallas, where they have the opposite problem, where the city is projected to grow by, you know, 1,000% in the next few years because people are kind of flocking to the Sunbelt cities. But I think it, you know, even as they're putting up a lot of housing developments, people still want to there. They don't want just someplace they come home and sleep because they, you know, it was slightly less expensive real estate. They want to feel like they have a community that they can be a part of, that they can contribute to and have a voice in making this town great. And, you know, like it's something that I hope that city employees and elected officials think about, but also individuals as they think about choosing the place and also creating community in their town, that this is something that you can be a part of and you need to be thoughtful about it. You know, like I kind of refer to it as it's a practice like yoga or something else, something that you do every day that you're mindful of and intentional about, creating opportunities to build community in your town.
And I truly do believe as an individual, you feel more whole when you are part of a community where there is that collaboration, that teamwork, that partnership, because you're just so much more connected. And I do think with the pandemic that did, I don't know if the proper word is personify even further the need for connection beyond just social media, that you need to have one-on-one interactions with one another. The pandemic, I didn't realize people in our neighborhood, and we live in a little isolated suburban neighborhood, but I met the majority of them because during the pandemic, they finally started walking around the neighborhood.
Interesting.
Right?
Yeah. I think, you know, when I was in this town in Texas, one of the employees that I was speaking to brought up the epidemic of loneliness, you know, that 60% of Americans say they always or sometimes feel lonely. And so that too becomes something that cities need to become conscious of, that your residents need connection just to be healthy. You know, the health effects of loneliness are so dire. It's something like akin to smoking 16 packs of cigarettes a day or something.
That's
insane.
Right.
To be healthy, we need that connection, but we don't always know how to achieve it for ourselves. I've gotten so many questions about how do I make friends as an adult? You know, it really,
it's the hardest thing to do.
Yeah. You know, like I like to tell people, just join things, you know, like
it's not easy just to join.
It's not easy. It's really right. I totally recognize it, but
I say the same thing to people.
Right. We've kind of moved away from a culture of joining things. You know, we used to be, excuse me, everyone went to church or everyone had a bowling league or something like that. And, you know, that is going away, and that's making it harder to connect.
It's making it much more difficult to connect. And I really, every once in a while, I'll meet somebody, be out hanging out with friends and meet one of my friend's friends that will approach me and they'll say, how do we want to start becoming more connected and involved with these organizations. How do we do it? And I don't even necessarily know how I fell into the nonprofits that I'm involved in. I don't know how, like, thinking back, it's all such a blur, but here I am.
Well, and also you created something for yourself too, you know, and sometimes you have to do that. Like, you create the parents group, or you,
yes,
you know, you work on the nonprofit because you had a really good idea for something and it's not happening. And I love to see that too in communities. I think that's a really important part of building your own place attachment, your own sense of connection to your community, is you feel an openness, a freedom to make your stuff happen. And that's one of the reasons I actually do love kind of smaller towns, because I think there is more openness to that. Not always, but generally.
I completely agree. And I think I like a smaller town myself. Actually, with age, I feel like I want to get more and more rural. But yeah. I do think that when there is that smaller town, I think that there's also more opportunities.
Yeah.
There are more opportunities to find those groups that you can connect with, to get the smile and the high as you're walking by, than there is in a larger city where it is that go, go, go. Where if you literally said hi to everybody that you walked by, they would be like one high as 20 people by you.
Right. One nonstop high for sure. Yes. Yeah. And I love a city too. I would say Washington, D.C. is on our short list of places that we would absolutely move. And I think it's great. But I do think it's higher stress, it's busier, and you know, in some ways there can be more opportunities to connect because there's so much going on, but you really have to seek it out. And I think you do have to seek it out anywhere. Just, you know, as with anything that you do that's good for you, but also a little like hard sometimes, you know, sometimes making friends is a little bit like joining the gym, or, you know, yes, I'm going to work out. Like, I know this is good for me and it's going to be hard at first, but it's going to be great in the end.
So speaking of seeking, with your two books, what was the process like to find the publisher and get your book out there for all of us to read?
So the first book was, I was starting from scratch. You know, even though I had written for magazines and newspapers, I did not know anyone who worked in the publishing industry. And so I went about it the way I think any random person would do it. I read books about how do you write a book proposal. And, yes, you know, I joined an online class about writing a book proposal, and I worked on that thing for months and months. And while I worked on this thing, I was collecting the names of agents, you know, like I would read Writer's Digest or something, and if I came across the name of an agent, I'd write it down. And so just kind of like did some research about how is this done? What is the process? I knew I was really hopeful to kind of have a mainstream publisher. I think self-publishing can be amazing, but for me, I was hoping for a publisher, and I knew the first step was getting an agent. So
yes,
once I finally finished this book proposal, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to start emailing this list of 80 agents that I've collected. And luckily within the, you know, I sent out the first batch, I emailed, I think, 8 agents, and heard back from almost all of them. And
oh, that is great.
It was miraculously fast for me, which I'm so grateful for, but I was ready to not have it be fast. I really was ready to be in it for the long haul, and I'm going to contact every agent I can think of. But thankfully I had some people who are interested. My agent, Lisa Grubka, was someone who my story about Place resonated with her because she was a transplant to New York from small town Michigan. And so we really connected. And so once the agent had the proposal and we had a contract, she shopped it around to big publishing houses. And that is how it ended up with Viking, which is an imprint of Penguin. And so I got to do a whole kind of official New York City publishing process, which was fun and scary and interesting and really a huge education.
How long did it take to get to that point?
To get to the point of having the contract, you know, a book contract in hand, I'd probably been working on the idea and kind of slowly writing this proposal for a couple years, honestly. And I don't think it needs to take that long. I was sort of not 100% sure. I knew I wanted to write a book about moving and, you know, having done this move from Texas to Virginia. And I was just like, gosh, why isn't there a manual to help people figure out how to do this better? And so I kind of thought, that's what I want to write. But wasn't quite sure how to approach it. And so it just took me a long time to kind of puzzle it out in my mind. And I remember there was this moment, you know, I'm in bed with my husband at night and I'm just like, I'm just going to drop this. Like, this is not happening. I've been working on this forever and it's the worst. And he was just like, you need to put aside all your other work, all your other freelance jobs, just like set them aside and give yourself a month to really devote yourself to getting this done and reaching the finish line on writing a book proposal. And he really encouraged me to stick with it. And so that's what I did and managed to get it done. But it was a long haul. And then once I had the proposal, I had a full year to write the book. Okay. And then it was an additional full year for them to sort of do their publishing magic, everything from editing and revising to picking a cover and figuring out a marketing plan and everything. So really, I mean, it sort of consumes your life for a long time to have a book come out. But it was great too. It was super fun.
How many times did you have to reread your book before you submitted?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I remember it was so much. And I was so, you know, speaking of perspective, where you have no idea what's good or what's not. You have overthought it so much. I remember getting back a very late stage draft, you know, we just need one more read. We need you to approve this final draft. And I was just like, I cannot read this again. I am so done. I'm just like, it's fine. No changes. And even to this day, I have not gone back to reread, you know, like I reread portions when I do a reading or something, but I'm just like, I can't.
I'm do done.
Well, yeah, you definitely get to a point where you're like, this is so terrible. Like that.
Yeah.
You're just convinced that this is the worst piece of writing that has ever been produced. And you're ashamed to put it out in the world.
That's, you know, amazing that you just said that. I think about that with everybody who has that great idea, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They are so excited that they have chills all over about how great this idea is. And then the more they think about it and the days that go on, as that idea is still in their mind, they chip away at the reasons why it's not a good idea until that's it.
Well, right.
I'm glad you didn't do that.
Yeah, almost though, you know, like I think when you're in it and you sort of lack that distance, it really can become very difficult to maintain any sort of perspective. Like I was revising my book chapters and really just thought, you know, there's a gap between what you want it to be and what it actually is. And that can be really disheartening. Ira Glass from This American Life talks about you have taste, you know what's good, but you just don't quite have the talent to produce it. And that can be really hard to not, it's not as good as you want it to be. And because of that, I just, for a long time, became convinced, you know, this is horrible. Like to the point where I didn't want people to read it. And then, you know, some time passed and I would go back and, you know, I have to do a reading or whatever. And I'd reread parts and I'm like, this is actually kind of good. You know, like, I don't even remember writing this and it's fine. So, you know, that helped the second time just to know that that is going to happen. I wish it didn't. I don't know that that happens for all writers or if I'm just distinctly neurotic about it, but you know, we do get in our own heads.
I think we all have a tendency to get in our own heads about everything. I try to back away and remind myself of that first original feeling and try to hold on to that because I mean, there's a lot of things that get into our minds of that will tell you all the reasons why something might not work or translate the way that it needs to be translated. So I really try to hold on to the why nots because that's instinctively who I am. So I need to hold on to that part of me and not allow life that has created that other portion of who I am prevent the other. So I
love that. Well, and this will sound weird, but I love the British Bake Off. And I don't know if you watch this show.
100%. I even tried to make the crackers or cookies that and did not do very well.
But I love seeing people fail on that show, right? Because that's what they're doing every time is they're, you know, they're producing something and being judged on it. You very literally being judged on the thing that they produce. And, you know, sometimes you'll see them in the little interviews after and there'll be a few tears shed or something, but they always somehow manage to just shrug it off and move forward. And then the next thing they produce is great. And I love that attitude to failing fast and moving on and allowing yourself to not be perfect. You don't have to have the perfect idea or the perfect piece of writing or the perfect work product every single time. You can just make something and put it into the world and see what happens and then make something else. And it's fine.
I completely agree with you. Absolutely. Well, Melody, I'm not going to keep you any longer. I appreciate you so much. Thank you so much for coming on.
It was such a fun discussion, Lisa. I love talking to you. And thanks for inviting me to dig into this with you.
Yes. And anybody who wants to purchase your books, they could, I know for a fact they can get it off of Amazon because that's where I
bought them. Right. It's always the easiest thing. But I also have a website, which is my name, melodywarnick.com. And that will sort of direct you as well.
All right. Thank you. I hope you have an amazing evening.
Thank you too. Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you everyone for listening in to The Seed. If you'd like to receive our weekly newsletter, go to dandelion-inc.com and click Let's Connect. And please be sure to subscribe to The Seed's monthly podcast to hear more inspiring stories from other badass women that are all around us. Remember, behind every woman is a tribe of other successful women who have their back. To you all, thank you.